Thank you all. Thank you for coming to learn together this evening. I understand this goes on every week. Yeah? Okay. Rashai did it last week?
A few weeks ago.
Okay. Great. So it seems like a wonderful initiative to get together to learn as much as you can. It's a beautiful thing to do. And you should keep it up. Keep doing it. It's a great opportunity. I wanted to share with you really just one thought on the parsha, but it's not just a thought on the parsha. It's really something that I think is one of the most important yesodos that a person could learn in life, and the more a person can train themselves in this idea, in this foundational concept in life, I think the better life you're going to have. Like, literally, I think this is, I'm selling you an elixir of life. Like, this, you know, man bayichai, the Gemara says that someone used to go around saying, who wants life? I'm selling life. Well, I think that this yesod, this basic idea will if one is able to internalize it properly, can actually materially change a person's life in positive ways. So with that, you know, that's a good now you want to hear it, right? So let's start with a little bit from the parsha. There's a lot in the parsha today. I was able to be Maver Sedra the entire parsha during YU graduation today. I managed to cover the whole thing sitting on the stage. But there's a lot in the parsha, a lot of interesting topics. You have the topic of Nazir in this week's parsha. You have the topic of Birchas Kohanim in this week's parsha. And you also have the topic of the B'nai Kahas carrying the Aron in this week's parsha, among many others. But I'm going to ask one question from each of those three sections of the parsha. Again, from Nazir, from Birchas Kohanim, and from the B'nai Kahas carrying the Aron. One question from each of those sections of the parsha. What's the rule of a Nazir? What's a Nazir? First of all, can a woman be a Nazir? Yes, no? What do we say? What do we think? Yes, a woman can absolutely be Nazir. The Pasuk says, Ish o Isha. This is one of the questions Rav Shechter used to ask when guys would apply to the Kollel. They have to go to Rav Shechter and take a quick bechina with him, where he asks like things that, he has a gift for asking things that seem like the simplest questions in the world that you should definitely know the answer to. And the only thing that all of those questions have in common is that most of the time people don't know the answers to them. So he would often ask guys, can a woman be a Nazir? And they would start like, I'm going to say Shazman Grama and, you know, Kedusha and this and that. And, you know, it's like Kahuna and Kohen, B'nai Aron, V'Lebrosa. They'd come up with all sorts of interesting things. And he says, I think the Pasuk says Ish O Isha. You know, like it's right there in Chumash. So a woman can absolutely, yes, become a Nazir. What are the rules of a Nazir? What does a Nazir do, not do? Can't cut their hair. Can't drink wine, right? So those are the big ones, right? Those are the things we think of when we think of a Nazir. Can you be a Nazir nowadays? The halach is yes, you can be a Nazir nowadays. You just can't get out of it. Meaning the way to get out of Nazirus is by bringing karbanos at the end. And until we're able to bring those karbanos, if a person decides they're going to be a Nazir, they will be a Nazir until either the Beis HaMikdash is built or until they die. Whichever comes first. We hope the Beis HaMikdash being built comes first. But those are like the two options. That's the only way. That's why you don't find too many Nazirim nowadays. There used to be a Nazir in Eretz Yisrael, a famous Nazir, one of Rav Kook's Talmidim was a Nazir, and he was known as the Nazir, because there weren't so many of them, right? So Nazirus is a rare thing, but those are the two things that you think of when you think of Nazirus. Not drinking wine, and by the way, it's not just wine, it's grape juice, it's grapes, it's grape peels, it's grape products. They're not allowed to have any grape products, and that they're not allowed to cut their hair, which is the most obvious thing when you meet a Nazir, is that their hair is crazy, right? Meaning they never, ever get a haircut, right? It's like Chabad's beards, right? Meaning, but it's everything. It's not just their beards. It's the whole everything. It's their whole head of hair. So the Gemara, in fact, it would seem to support this, that these are the most important things about a Nazir, because the Gemara says, Kalara sota bekukula, Yazir atzmo minayayin. The Gemara tries to understand the sequence of parshios, of topics in this week's parsha, and it says, anyone who sees a sota and the consequences of her actions and where she ended up, what the winner's circle looks like when a woman is unfaithful to her husband, Yazir atzmo minayayin, will take upon themselves that they're never going to to drink wine. Because you say, wow, that's what wine does? I mean, when you get drunk, that's what leads you to make, it leads you to that kind of poor decision making? I better stay away from wine. It's like, it's something that scares a person straight. It scares a person to stay away from alcohol. It does not say, kalaro asotu bukukula yazer atzmo mitumas meis, or yazer atzmo mitisporas, that they say, oh, I better never cut my hair, or I better never become tummy to a dead body. No, it says yazer atzmo minayayin, because the essence of nazirus seems to really be about not drinking wine. So let me ask you something. It is a little bit strange. The Rambam, in the sixth parak of Hilchos Nazirus, records a halacha as follows. Nazir shashasa yayin. If a nazir drank wine, va'achal yotze min hagefen, or he ate a grape product. What are common grape product snacks? I don't know, but raisins, right? That's a good one. Or yeah, raisins works. Raisinets, right? For the less healthy out there. So a person eats a grape product, afilu yamim rabim, and he eats it day after day after day, and he's a nazir, and he keeps eating, keeps violating, keeps eating the, drinking the wine, eating the raisins, keeps doing it over and over again. What impact does that have on his nazirus? If a person decided today on May 28th that they're going to be a nazir for the next 30 days until whatever, June 27th, that they're going to be a nazir, and on May 29th and May 30th and May 31st and June 1st and June 2nd, every day they're drinking wine and they're eating grapes, you know when their nazirus is going to end? June 27th, right on schedule. Everything is going to be on schedule. It does nothing to affect his nazirus. To be sure, each time he does it, he's violating an avera. He or she, as we now know, each time he or she does it, they're violating an avera. But it does nothing to affect their nazirus. What if a nazir says, I just can't take this, I need to get a haircut? Right? Let's say I declared that I was going to be a nazir for the next 30 days, and I come home tonight, and my wife takes one look at me, and she's like, your beard is out of control. You got to do something about that. Don't come back until you... She doesn't normally talk like this, but you know, she'll say the out of control part, but she won't say the don't come back part. But let's say, don't come back until that beard is trimmed. And I say, you know what? Shalom bayis over everything else. I'm going to go and I'll get my beard trimmed. Maybe I'll, whatever. Would that change my nazirus one bit? It's an avera. It's wrong. Does not change my nazirus. I go get a haircut every day of my nazirus. It will not change my nazirus one bit. The only thing that will stop the nazirus and make you restart the nazirus is contact with the dead body. Of all the things, you know, I purposely asked you in advance, what are the dinim of a nazir? And everyone said, oh, wine and haircuts. No one said, you can't go to a funeral. No one said, you can't go to a cemetery. That's the third halacha of a nazir. And we often think of it as, it's like the third halacha, because it's the least important, the least ubiquitous, the one that we think of the least when we think of a nazir, right? That's the third halacha of a nazir. It's the only one that can destroy your nazirus. It's the only one that breaks the nazirus and says, got to bring a carbon, start again. Nazir shenitma, bein bezadon, bein beshkaga. A nazir becomes tamei, whether he did it purposely or even by accident. Did nothing wrong. Guy was just, or girl, was just sitting there minding their own business. And the person right next to them drops dead. Right? Nothing wrong. Did nothing wrong. I tried to save them even. They're gone. Right? Nothing wrong. But I just became tamei. The halacha is, va'afilu tumu goyim ba'ones. And not only that, even if two non-Jews pick me up and schlep me into a cemetery, so sarakol, destroys the whole nazirus. So question number one is, why? If it's the least important din of a nazir, it's the thing that we least associate with the nazirus, what's the deal with this tumas meis thing? Why is that so important? Why is that the only thing that runs so counter to the kedusha of a nazir, to the holiness, the sanctity, the elevated status of a nazir, that it destroys his entire nazirus? Wine doesn't, and cutting his hair doesn't. So why is it that tumah does? That is question number one. Question number two. We said we're going to ask one question from each section of the parsha. The second section we're going to ask from is Birchas Kohanim. So Birchas Kohanim contains how many psukim? In the bracha? Three, correct. Three psukim in the bracha of Birchas Kohanim. Each pasuk has two more words than the previous pasuk. Yivrecha Hashem v'yishmerecha, That's three words, right? Yo'er Hashem panav elecha vichunaka. That's five words. Yisa Hashem panav elecha v'yasein lecha shalom. That's seven words. So why am I pointing that out? Because Chazal pointed out. Normally, Chazal don't pay much attention, or at least don't mention how many words there are in a pasuk. That's not something that Chazal do very often. They're not so concerned by how many words. They're much more concerned about the content of the pasuk, what it says, if there's any extra words, if there's anything that's unnecessary in the pasuk, that they're going to zone in on. But how many words in this pasuk versus that pasuk versus that pasuk, that's normally not something they talk about, so it catches your attention when they do talk about it. And over here they do. The Gemara Maseches Megillah on Daf Chav Gimel tells us that how many aliyos do we have on a weekday when we lane on a Monday or a Thursday? We have three aliyos to the Torah. And on a yomtiv that falls out during the week, not on a Shabbos, on a yomtiv that falls out during the week, how many aliyos do we have? We have five aliyos to the Torah. And how many aliyos do we have on Shabbos? We have seven. And the Gemara says, that's interesting. We have three, incidentally, Yom Kippur is six. It's like between Yom Tov and Shabbos. It's something in between. But the Gemara is not dealing with that at the moment. The Gemara says, Hani shlosh chamisha v'shiva k'neged mi. Why three, five, and seven? What does that correspond to? What do those numbers even mean? And the Gemara says, k'neged birchus kohanim. That's the exact number of words that there are in the three pesukim of Birchus Kohanim. Say the first pesuk of Birchus Kohanim has three words. Oh, that's like weekday laning. The second pesuk of Birchus Kohanim has five words. That's Yom Tov laning. The third pesuk of Birchus Kohanim has seven words. That's Shabbos laning. So don't you see how that makes perfect sense? And the obvious question is, no, I don't see how that makes perfect sense. Ma hakesher. What in the world is the connection between these things? How many aliyos we lay in on any given day versus how many psukim there are in, how many words there are in the psukim of Birchus Kohanim? What does Birchus Kohanim have to do with Kriyas HaTorah to begin with? The whole connection seems a little bit difficult. So that is question number two. So again, question number one, why is the Tumah thing about Nazir so, so critical? Why is that so important? Question number two, why is it that the Gemara relates Birchus Kohanim, the number of words in the pasuk of Birchus Kohanim, to the number of aliyos that we lain on weekdays, on Yom Tovim, and on Shabbos? Question number three, probably a lesser known section of the Parsha, Ulubneka Haslonasan. The pasuk says the family of Kahas were not provided with wagons to carry what they had to carry. Most of the time, they were carrying things through the desert, namely the Mishkan. They had to schlep through the desert. Makes sense. Put the stuff on wagons instead of schlepping everything around yourself. Right? We do this. We have shopping carts when we're walking around the supermarket. We have cars that we load all of our groceries into. We have, and if you have a lot of stuff to pack up, you put it in a truck or something like that. So, of course, they had wagons. They were schlepping around from one place to the other. L'bnei Kahas lo nasa. No, the B'nei Kahas did not get to carry wagons. Why? Ki avodas hakodesh aleihem b'kasef yisau. They were carrying very holy things. And because they were carrying very holy things, they had to carry these things on their shoulders. The Gemara in Meseches Arachin Dafil Aleph Darshins, Ein yisu ela lashon shira. When it says yisau, it's a lashon of shira. That they were carrying something means they were singing. Shenemar su'u zimra usnusof. That su'u is used in the context of zimra, of zemer. So when it says that the Bnei Kahas were carrying something, they were schlepping it on their own shoulders, which is much more burdensome and much more, takes much more effort, takes much more energy, that is like singing a song. Now, there are times that we feel like singing. You know, I was at YU graduation today. Joey Newcomb came on stage. The guy is like electric. I mean, I've never seen so much charisma in my life. You know, like he's got. He's Uncle Maishi for adults, but like, you know, but still, so what? You know, that's adults could use a little more Uncle Maishi in their lives, probably. He was so. That's when you feel like singing. He gets on stage and he does his thing, and you know, with the guitar behind his head, and somehow he's got Mike Huckabee dancing along with him, you know, Brother Mike, as he called him, right? So that's how you that's what inspires singing. You ever like have to schlep something that's like really heavy to carry? You feel like singing a song when you're schlepping something? What is schlepping up to the singing? No, it's like a, oh God, I gotta carry this. You know, you wait. You have to, I don't know if you guys have in your house. In my house, we have the Poland Spring water bottles, you know, that you got to, like, lift the thing and put it over the, right? So what happens if you have the last water, and like, you finish it? You see it goes below the line. So what do you do? What do you do? Honestly, you look around. Is anyone here? No one sees? Okay, I'm going to pretend it wasn't me. I'll go, you know, someone else will do the schlepping. It's like hard. I don't want to schlep that. The next person, when they see that it's empty, will be like, oh, come on, how come no one did this? And then they'll have to do it themselves, and then you'll go get yourself another cup of water. You'll refill your old wallow or whatever. Okay, right? That's, because it's annoying. It's annoying to schlep things. And the Gemara makes this association between singing and schlepping. What is it? Ein yisau elu lashon shira. Yisau means that you're singing. Why is carrying a burden the same as singing? So we got our three questions. Question number one was, of all the rules of Nazirus, of all the three halachas that a Nazir is not allowed to do, he cannot have grape products, he cannot cut his hair, and he cannot become tummy to a dead body. Why is tumma to a dead body the only one that really breaks his nazirus, the only one that has consequences to it? Second, well, the others have consequences, but serious consequences. Second, the three psukim of Birch's Kranim, the Gemara says, three words, five words, seven words, and that's why we have three aliyos, five aliyos, seven aliyos on a weekday, Yom Tov and Shabbos. Maha Kesher. What do they have to do with one another? And third, the Gemara in Arachin says, B'nei Kahas had to schlep things on their shoulders, and that leads a person to singing. It's a lashon of shira when you have to schlep something. Why is that a lashon of shira? So here's the yisod. And this is the yisod that you probably all know. Many of you may not know how important it is, but take it from someone with a few more years of life experience than you have. It is really, really important. There are a lot of things that bring a person to fall short in Avodas Hashem, to not maximize their potential, to not be their best selves, whatever expression you want to use to describe doing Averos, right? Meaning to not really be the best that they can be. The Mishnah Maseches Sota tells us that when trying to encourage a woman who had sinned, a Sota who had sinned, to admit to her sins, and to avoid having to go through that whole procedure. I'm sure you're familiar with the procedure of Sota. It's not a pleasant thing to go through. We have to erase God's name, and she has to drink this potion, and the consequences can be devastating. So we try to encourage her, admit, so that we don't have to do this, and we acknowledge, listen, we understand that an Avera doesn't happen in a vacuum. There's always a context for an Avera. There's a lot of things that bring about Averos. And we tell her, the Mishnah says, Harbe Yayin Osa. We know that when you drink too much wine, you're not making your best decisions. Right? People, they say that when you drink a lot of wine, it's very hard to keep to your diet, to keep to a healthy diet. Why is that the case? So mostly because your decision-making process is, you don't, your willpower goes away. You don't have the same, so it's very difficult. Harbe yayin osa, we get it. Harbe schok osa, there's a lot that being too frivolous in the way that you speak and in the way that you interact with people. We understand that you joke around too much and you make a joke out of things that are serious sometimes and that could lead to averos. Harbe yaldus osa. We understand that immaturity leads to a lot of averos. Harbe shechena marayim osim. Probably even more than all that. We understand that sometimes you're just around the wrong crowd. You're hanging out with the wrong people, and you're just going along with what the crowd is doing. And if they're doing bad stuff, you're doing bad stuff too. With all of that, again, here's the yisod. It still didn't say it yet. Perhaps there's no greater impediment to achieving in Avodas Hashem, to being the best we can be. There's no greater impediment than a person being negative or sad. Put in a positive way, a person who feels good about him or herself might make a poor decision, but they'll bounce right back because they'll realize that each moment carries great potential for productivity. They'll understand that each failure was a learning experience, and they'll know how to bounce back from it. They'll know how to be more productive the next day or the next moment. A person who's down on themselves is more likely to fall into what they call thinking traps, where they think the world is caving in on them and that there's no hope and that everything's going to always be bad. that there's a common thinking trap that people fall into, that whatever it is now, they assume is always going to be the case. They don't realize that life is dynamic and things change, and there are good times and there are harder times, and they don't realize that the world changes around them, that people change, and that people sometimes are forgiving and sometimes people forget, and sometimes people grow, and sometimes opportunities come. And so, and a person who is down on themselves falls into those kinds of traps. It's clear that the parts of Nazirus are to be understood not just as prohibitions, that a Nazir not allowed to have wine, not allowed to cut their hair. It's not just prohibitions. It's a character modification. It's a way of building a person. It's a way of changing a person's character. When we say don't drink wine, it's not about the diet of how many grape products you have in your diet. It's a separation from excessive partying, the separation from excessive pleasure of this world, that we're saying, listen, don't indulge in everything you could indulge in. There are a lot of pleasures that are out there. You could leave some on the table. You know, there's a something called, I think it's called the Tainus HaRaivit, that some people do. My grandfather, Zichron Levracha, used to do this. I never understood it, I think, till after he died. I first heard about this and I realized what he was doing. Every meal, he would eat. He enjoyed good food. He definitely didn't overeat, you remember. But he would always, always leave something on his plate. He never finished his plate. Rare for a Holocaust survivor, no? Holocaust survivors always say, you know what that food is? How could you throw that in the garbage? How could you throw anything in the garbage? So it wasn't about throwing in the garbage. He would leave a little food on his plate. The concept is, I don't need to eat everything that's in front of me. I don't need to indulge in every pleasure just because it's available. It doesn't have to be taken advantage of just because it's there. And that's the Yazir Atzmo Minayayin. The refrain from Etami Lemesim, Rabbi Isaac Sher writes, is a harchaka from depression, from things that pull a person down. It's very sad when you're around death a lot. And the Nazir is told, you know what, stay away from that for a while. Learn how to think positive. Learn how to think in a way that's going to uplift you. And of course, death is part of this world. And Chazal even tell us, I mean, the Pesukim, Tov Lelechus LeBeis Evel and Beis Mishta, that in a certain sense, it's better for a person to go to a house of mourning than to go to a wedding. Right? How many times do you come away from a wedding feeling, I really learned something. I really learned something deep, an important message. You come back from a Shiva house or a funeral all the time. All the time. Wow, that person seemed like such a regular person. And they did that hanhaga, that practice, that sensitivity. You learn something. Like you learn, you feel like you're growing. So there is great, great value. And we don't ignore that value. There's great value in going to a Beis Evel. And halavai, going to a Beis Mishnah should bring us inspiration also. We should probably make our mishta'us in a way that provides more inspiration. I was just having a conversation with a friend of mine, a rabbinic colleague, but also a friend from before either one of us were rabbis, wrote an article this week about like 10 commandments of weddings. An article about 10 things that people should be mindful about when making a wedding. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was excellent. Most stuff he writes is excellent. So one of the things, so I told him, that I was at a wedding recently. He asked me for comments, if you have anything to add. I told him I was at a wedding recently, that at the end of the chuppah, they announced on the microphone that the minhag in our family, on the kala side of the family, is that with all the downtime that you have between the chuppah and the first dance, we have one of the Rosh Yeshiva who's attending the wedding say a shir. And they designated a room, and like, I don't know, 50, 60 people went to this shir. I was the only guy taking notes, and I got to use it for a Shavuah shir, so it worked out really well for me. But like, I had never seen that before. I got someone thinking outside the box, you know. Wait, I have a cousin who made a wedding recently, and this is the second wedding they made. Every place card came with a personalized note to tell you how much you mean in their lives. You know how much work that is? You know how much thought that takes? You know how much time that takes? So I was telling my friend, I think the klal by weddings should be, instead of thinking about, everyone wants to differentiate themselves. No one wants to just be like, rinse, repeat, same wedding again, you know? Like a lot of times, my favorite wedding venue is Marina Del Rey, because it's on my way home from yeshiva, and the food is always good, and you know, like, and so the Bensi runs it, you know, well, and I know it's going to run on time, right? So it's got a lot of milas. You know, sometimes I make the joke, I'm at a Thursday night wedding at Marina, I'm like, this for dinner again? I had this every night this week, you know? But everyone wants to try to do something unique, something different, something that's going to make it stand out. So instead of another arch of flowers on the way to the chuppah, to say, oh, we came up with a kunst. We figured out a place you could stick flowers that no one ever thought of before, and that's what's going to make this wedding different. Maybe try to make it different in a ruchnius kind of way. Is it feasible for every wedding to have a shir between? No, it's not feasible. A lot of the venues don't even, there's no place for it. You know, a frum wedding hall, you know, those places, like, you go and, like, you're at, like, the Kabbalah's Panim, and then, like, you stand up, and they move a bunch of stuff around you, and you sit down, and you're at the chuppah, and then you stand up, and they move a bunch of stuff around you, and you sit down, and you're at the suda, right? Meaning, like, it can't, it's not even designed for it. It's not possible in every place. Is it possible for everybody to write out cards and notes? I don't think most of us have the patience, the time, the kochos and nefesh. But maybe if we think in those terms, that, like, if we can make our parties, our weddings, our celebrations different, but not different in that we're going to figure out, I'll hire the third famous singer, you know, at the event, so that it will be better than the other rich guy who only had two famous singers at the event, so that instead of everyone dancing, they'll be with their phones, with the singer, you know, videoing the singers the whole time. We can actually, like, think out of the box and say, like, how can I uplift the simcha in a ruchnius kind of way? So going to a wedding could be a learning experience. Usually it's not. Tov lach zebeis evin beis mishta. I mean, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's great, it's a simcha, it's fantastic. But tov lach zebeis evin, as far as a learning experience, going to beis evin is more of a learning experience, usually. But yet the nazir is told, for a little while, for the duration of your nazirus, stay away from death. Stay away from death. And it's trying to train him in having a sense of positivity, in just staying away from morbid thoughts. The Maral in Parshas Kisetze says that Misha Nichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha, because Simcha brings good mazel and Hatzlacha. The reason that we're supposed to be Simcha during Adar, says the Maral, is not because we're affected by the mazel of the month. That, ooh, when Adar comes, there's Hashem sprinkles mazel dust on the world, and we just capture it. You know, we just try to catch it. No. When Adar comes, you put a bigger smile on your face. You do more festive things. You're making the mazel dust. You're the one that's putting it out there in the world. You're the one that's bringing this goodness and this happiness. You ever wonder, like, I'm sure some of you have been to Camp Simcha or Camp Hask, some of these extraordinary, happy places. They happen during Chodesh Av. How does that happen? Chodesh Av. They always say, like, in a lot of camps, they have Purim in Av, or something like Purim in July, they call it, because Purim in Av sounds ridiculous, right? So they call it Purim in July, is like the activity for the day. It's like Purim's not in July. But maybe the idea is, that our mitzvah is to be b'simcha, and when we're b'simcha, we bring that mazel into the world. We create that mazel. The mitzvah is to do it during Adar. So if we happen to be able to do it during the summer, in places where it's a great mitzvah to do it during the summer, so then great. But we're able to do it. We're able to generate that with our own positivity. When people are b'simcha, good things happen all around them. You know, Rav Yisrael Reisman often comments that he tells a story about someone in his shul is cleaning out his old svarim or something, or his father's old svarim, and he found a journal from like the 1940s in America, a Hapardes journal. It was a Torah journal, and he didn't know what to do with all these copies of this journal, so he brought it to his rabbi, he brought it to Rabbi Reisman, and he said, maybe this will be of interest. This happens all the time. People bring whatever they're cleaning out. Just this morning, someone came to me in shul with a sefer, and he's like, my mom had this in her house, and just thought maybe you'd find use for it. So maybe I will, maybe I won't. But like, okay, see what's out there, see what's interesting. So Rabbi Reisman said, all the rabbis of the time in America in the 1940s would write articles in this journal about, you know, Torah topics. And he said he found something fascinating. He noticed a trend that half of the articles were like, Oyvei, Europe is burning and America has no ruchnias, there's no kashrus, there's no Shabbos, there's nothing, there's no Torah here, everything is falling to pieces, and Yiddish, you know, woe unto us. You know, there were those types of articles. And then there was the other half of the articles were like, it looks like we're starting to see flourishing of Torah in America. We established a new day school, and a mikveh has been built in another community. And we're seeing more Shabbos observance here and there. And another shul, another Orthodox shul is opening up. And, you know, just focusing on the positive points. And who knows, maybe in another decade from now, Orthodoxy will maybe even be almost the strongest conservative. And, you know, like whatever crazy dreams they had for the future. And he said then he noticed this unbelievable thing. All the authors of the first type of article, the woe unto me, everything is terrible, everything's falling to pieces, which, by the way, they weren't lying. It was horrible. The ruchnius in America was pretty bad at that time. All of those authors were people, Rabbi Reisman said, that I had never heard of. They were probably huge Talmidei Chachamim. He said, I had never heard of them. All of the authors of the articles about how things are great and soon we're going to, you know, we're working on it and things are getting better and, you know, we're on the upswing now and there's going to, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to watch over Klal Yisrael and these shores the same way. You know, all of those authors, those are the famous rabbis you've heard of. Those are the Rav Moshe Feinsteins of the world. Those are the Rav Aaron Cutlers of the world. Those are the Lubavitcher Rebbes of the world. Those are the people you heard of. Why? If your leadership style is to walk around with a frown and to tell everybody how terrible things are, who wants to connect to that? Who wants to be like, oh, I wish I was as sad as that person? No one wants that. Everyone wants the same thing in life, right? Everyone wants to be happy. Well, a lot of times people are misguided in terms of what's going to make them happy, but everyone wants the same thing. Everyone just wants to be happy. So when you see a person who's got it, they've got this joy, they've got this simchas achayim, they've got something about it. You're like, I want that. I want to attach myself to that. Based on this most important yesod, to learn how to smile, to learn how to take things with a sense of joy, to learn how to see things in a positive light. One of my chaverim told me, Rabbi Aryeh Yudin told me that when we were roommates in Yeshiva Karen Biavna, he's like, you don't understand what my father is like. His father, Binyamin Yudin Shlita, he said, if you were to walk over to him, unprompted, just spit in his face, he would say, oh, I needed a shower, thank you so much. I mean, there are certain people that there's no negativity in their lives. Rav Isaac Sher, in his Leket Sichos Moser, says that if we accept that symbolically, the separation from wine is the separation from partying and gashmius. Separation from mesim is the separation from excessive depression or focus on the negative. We have to see which is more crippling to a person. Is drinking more crippling to a person, or is negativity more crippling to a person? If you have a nazir who drank wine, he gets malchus. It does not disrupt his nazirus. But if that nazir is metami lemesim, the whole nazirus is cancelled. And that, says Rav Isaac Sher, is the Torah making a value statement. The message is that the Yetzer Hara for partying is bad, but an excessive gashmius is bad. But when the Yetzer Hara brings a person down and gets you upset and sad, that is much, much worse. Rav Schwab, Zichron Levracha, explains the three psukim of Birchas Kohanim. Unbelievable explanation of Rav Schwab. Three psukim of Birchas Kohanim relate to three parts of life. There's gashmius, there's ruchnius, and there's menuchas hanefesh. Gashmius is physical things, ruchnius is spiritual things, menuchas hanefesh is being a mentally healthy person. Being a person who's happy, being a person who's at peace with themselves. Chazal understand that Yivarechecha Hashem, the first pasuk of Birchas Kohanim, is about parnasa. Because Yivarech Hashem v'yishmerecha, Yishmerecha meant, according to Chazal, protect me from the ganavim and from the tax collectors and from all the people that are going to steal my money. That's gashmius. Yivarech Hashem v'yishmerecha. Second pasuk, Yisa Hashem panav elecha vichuneka. That's spiritual accomplishments. The third pasuk, Ya'er Hashem panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. The shalom we're talking about is an inner tranquility. That's menuchas ha'nefesh. And it follows, the bracha for Gashmias is the first one, the first pasuk, three words, corresponds to the laning of, what did we say?
Weekdays.
Weekdays is when we work to earn a parnasa. We do not work on Yantav, we do not work on Shabbos, unless you're a rabbi, right? We don't work on holy days. So that's, you're earning a parnasa on the weekdays. So that's the bracha that relates to parnasa. The second bracha relates to ruchnius. The Or Gedalia explains, hey, your panim comes from mitzvos and ruchnius. And that relates to Yantav. Yantav is a time a person has an aliyah in ruchnius. A person feels inspired, a sense of avodas Hashem. The third bracha is a bracha for menuchas hanefesh. A bracha for being happy, for being comfortable with yourself, for feeling a sense of serenity, a sense of peace. That is Shabbos. Remember COVID? Remember there was this thing? Yeah. People were very, very stressed. A lot of people were very stressed. And I've never seen more of an outpouring of appreciation for Shabbos than I did during COVID. People just so appreciated not having to read all the latest statistics of the latest strain and spread and this, and you know, open Yeshiva World News, which Gadol Adar died today, and you know, like 25 hours, Menucha. Shabbos brings a certain sense, it allows us to reorient, to recharge, to feel that sense of Menucha Senefesh. And it seems that the order is arranged of the Birkas Kohanim, Achron Achron Chaviv. Gashmius is important for survival, but not quite as important as Ruchnius. Ruchnius is important, but it cannot last or really even exist unless there's a sense of Menucha Senefesh. I just brought my Talmidim this week to Brooklyn to meet with certain big Talmidei Chachamim. So when we met with Rav Yisrael Reisman, one of my Talmidim asked him, what was the expression he used? Happy, healthy, holy, right? They said something like, be happy, be healthy, be holy. Is that an expression? So he said, is that true, that happiness, healthiness, holiness, that it comes like that in that order, that you can't have holiness unless you have happiness and healthiness? So Rabbi Reisman said, yeah, it's true, but you do have to get to the holiness. You can't stop at the happy and the healthy. I mean, it is true, but you can't really achieve holiness unless there's happy and healthy first. You can't. Rabbi Reisman said he asked Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky once about someone who had to go to whatever kind of rehab or institution that was a very non-frum environment. But they had some sort of addiction. They had something that had to be dealt with. But how could you put them in not from environment? No kashrus, no Shabbos. Rav Shmuel said, you're supposed to be a frum mensch. You're supposed to be a frum person. But you got to be a person before you can be frum. You have to be a person first. You have to make sure that there's a sense of being comfortable with oneself. The pasuk in Shmuel Aleph that describes the cows carrying the Aron back from the Plishtim says Vayisharna Haparos Baderech, which means Vayisharna, they walked a straight line. But the Gemara in Avodah Zarah understands it means that they sang Shira. So the Sfasemis explains that when carrying the Aron, a person is filled with Simcha and Shira. It goes hand in hand. That a person is who's really living their best Torah life has a sense of Shira in their life. And the Sfasemis says, Ukumo Kein Bekol Ovir Hashem Be'emes Shemismali Ziv V'Simcha. Anyone who's really serving Hashem and doing it right has a glory and a simcha. Now, part of the potential of this time of year, part of the great potential of this time of year, is that the weather turns better, right? And it therefore cheers people up a little bit. There's nothing as depressing as a rainy day, right? When the sun is out and you have that, there's a positive energy. We should try to identify those behaviors that make us feel good about ourselves, whether it's exercise, whether it's making sure to daven at the same time every day and feeling good about your tefillah, and lean into those things. Increase those behaviors that make us feel good about ourselves. We should identify those activities that make us feel unaccomplished and down on ourselves, like mindlessly scrolling on Instagram or YouTube shorts, and just try to stay away from it. A Talmud of mine told me that he sends his kids to Darche, And last year they had a technology night featuring Rabbi Joey Haber, where he described, you know, he discussed technology and the dangers, the pitfalls. And Rabbi Haber made a very resonant point. He asked the audience, he said, how much do you spend when you buy a suit? I guess it was a largely male audience. So someone said $300 because they were lying. So he said, you know, that's a little low. He's like, okay, not bad. $300, pretty good. He said, how much do you spend when you buy a car? So someone said $20,000. He said, Rabbi Haber said, I'm Syrian. You don't even get half a car for that, you know, but okay. He then said, how much does it cost to have YouTube on your phone? I said, it's free. How much does it cost to have Twitter on your phone or X? It's free. Instagram, what about Instagram? That must be expensive. It's a lot of content. It keeps you entertained for hours. Huh? How much does that cost? It's free. What about WhatsApp? It's free. I don't understand. YouTube, WhatsApp, Instagram. These companies are worth way more than Toyota. They're worth way more than whatever brand suit. I don't even know the name of Joseph A. Bank. Not so fancy. They're worth way more than all of these other companies. I don't understand. They're giving away their stuff for free. The product is free. How does that work? What are the economics of that? And he said such a critical point. And if you think about it, it's a little bit depressing. He said, when Toyota sells you a car, Toyota's the business, the car is the product, and you are the customer. So you are paying for the product. When the suit lady sells you a suit, the suit lady is the business, the suit is the product, and you are the customer. So you go and you buy the suit and you pay for the suit. When Instagram or YouTube operates, they are the business, the advertiser is the customer, and you are the product. The customer or advertiser is paying the company for your headspace, for your attention, for your eyeballs, for your brain. You are the product. You ever wonder why it feels so dehumanizing to waste away hours at a time on social media? It's because it is dehumanizing. You've gone from being a gavra to a cheftza. You've gone from being a person to being a product. You're no longer a customer. You're a thing. That's why it's so depressing. It's dehumanizing to become the product. Parshas Naso teaches us that we need to do things that inspire us. We need to do things that elevate us. Carrying the Aron on our shoulders is difficult. You would think when something's difficult, it's changing that water bottle, it's a krecht, it's hard. But it makes us sing Shira. It makes us sing Shira because it's meaningful to us. The most important thing you're going to find, and you know, I'm sure people here are at different stages in terms of shiduchim and whatever else. My advice to everybody, young men, young women alike, is find someone who you can build a happy home environment with. Someone who are walking into your house, there will be smiles. You'll walk in with a smile. The person that greets you will greet you with a smile. Someone that makes you feel comfortable about yourself. There are so many checklists and things, and you know, what yeshiva are we going to send our kids to? The kids that do not yet exist, in the community that you do not yet live, and the yeshivas that probably haven't yet been started. It's nice to have hashkafa, it's good. But there's nothing more important. And I might get in trouble for saying this, I say it all the time though, so there's nothing more important than finding someone that you can feel happy about yourself with, that you can smile with, that you can laugh with, that you can have a positive environment. And then whatever differences of opinion, they'll be taken in good cheer and good spirits. And that's ultimately the most important thing. It's the most important thing, not just in Shidduchim, it's the most important thing in life, in building a life of Avodah Hashem. Because as Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky said, before a person could be frum, a person has to be a mensch. I thank you again so much for inviting me, and you should keep this up. It's a beautiful thing that you do to get together on Thursday nights to learn Torah.